In lieu of a riff, let's just kick this off with a mailbag question. Does that work for you?
Love
Can we
that.
just
That's efficient. We're streamlining.
Yeah, exactly. Instead of bantering about, something nonsensical for 5 or so minutes before the start of the pod, let's just get straight down to business. We got one from our guy, Andrew Whiteside, OUSAS.
Kaka!
Question for the pod. What would it take for Brett Veach to win Executive of the Year next year? Follow up, what would it take for Andy Reid to win Coach of the Year? Wow. The first thing that sticks out to me about this is that it is a regular season award. Like, they vote before the playoffs.
I think
So
in the playoffs, right? Like, don't they usually,
yeah, maybe the
like the
first week of the
first week?
playoffs.
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
that's kind of when they
that
do
could be
that.
right. But it obviously, it so often goes to teams that exceed expectations in the regular season, because that's the nature of the award. And I guess it makes sense, because if you voted for MVP or Executive of the Year or Coach of the Year after the Super Bowl, like, the team that wins the Super Bowl is just gonna
We'll
win it
sweep.
every year, right? Most
Yeah.
of the time,
They should, at
99% of the
least.
time. So I kind of feel like, for me, I think the back-to-back Super Bowls, obviously, certainly a factor. And I feel like if the Chiefs go out and have a really dominant regular season, and they're the number one seed in the AFC, and they look positioned to win their third Super Bowl, whether or not they ultimately do it, because obviously the voting will take place before the Super Bowl occurs, I feel like that could get it done. But there's so many pitfalls with, these randos. It could be like, what's his name? Not Brian Callahan, but the other Callahan that's in
Well,
Tennessee now. Like, he goes out and
oh
wins
yeah.
like seven games. Like, he's probably going to win Coach of the Year. I don't know.
I think that there are two scenarios. Number one, you either have to be so over the top dominant that the little guys just don't matter anymore, which is to me an undefeated season. If they go through the regular season, like you said, not just in position to challenge for the third Super Bowl, but if this team is undefeated, I think they sweep this award, or the exact opposite. And if Brett Veach isn't old, and he might not be able to win Executive of the Year until this team completely falls apart and he has to rebuild it. And if he has to rebuild it post Mahomes and they get something going, and everyone thinks the Chiefs are going to win four games next year and they go out there and get in the playoffs, like, he has to become an underdog in order to win that, because that's, like you said, the nature of these awards are underdog type of awards, or at least overachieving type of awards. And when you're on top, you literally can't overachieve unless you do something that no one's ever done. Same thing with Andy. I think if Mahomes goes down week one year, knock on every type of wood that ever existed, and the Chiefs have a backup quarterback that hasn't done anything, and they go out there and win the division or something, like, Andy would be in position there for Coach of the Year for obvious reasons. But other than that, they're kind of too big to fail.
Welcome in to It's Always Sunny in Chiefs Kingdom. I'm Austin. Find me on Twitter /X at Real Bird Lawyer, on Blue Sky at Bird Law Expert. Here with me, as always, my co-host Taylor at Taylor _ Witt on Twitter /X, on Blue Sky at Taylor M. Witt. What's going on?
First day of March Madness, so I've got an eye on the basketball games. Nothing too crazy going on right now on this Thursday early evening, but excited to watch my Jayhawks play tonight. So that's kind of where I'm at. March 21st, March Madness.
Because it's March Madness, and because you care about amateur basketball players playing bad basketball against other amateur basketball players, we're going to try and keep this short and sweet. Fortunately, there is not actually that much going on in the NFL. It feels like the calm before the storm. Obviously, free agency, the initial wave is sort of passed, and we're still a month out from the draft. So we're going to hit the news. We're going to hit what is happening. And we're going to bring you the second installment of our off-season project, The Next Great American Dynasty. We will be recapping the Chiefs AFC Championship game loss to the New England Patriots, Patrick Mahomes' second career playoff game. Let's hit the news. There's really only one item of news here. It's L'Jarius Sneed. Will he? Won't he? Will he stay? Will he go? Should he stay? Or should he go? This has been a really unusual, odd, fascinating saga. I get that a lot of the insiders saying that the deal was done were maybe not, I mean, it wasn't Schefter and it wasn't Rapsheet. It wasn't the 100%ers. So let's call them the
99.
99%ers. The
Yeah.
ones where if they tweet something, it's 99% going to happen or has happened, or you can take it to the bank. I mean, like, it's getting pulled from Vegas if there's odds on it. Like, it's already, for all intents and
It's
purposes,
news.
it has occurred.
Yes.
And none of them have obviously broken that news. Adam Schefter went so far as to say that they haven't had conversations, which seems,
Crazy.
it seems wrong and it seems untrue. And, but again, Diana Russini said that they had had conversations, the Colts and Titans in the mix. And we, of course, man of the people, hero, Pretty Ricky, said that it was a done deal and it was going to get done. There was a really weird source off with a couple of Colts beats reporters, Stephen Holder, who was with The Athletic and now is back at ESPN. And
Hey,
I forget the other
Marino.
guy's name. He was also in the mix, but
Oh yeah. You're talking about yeah. There were a couple guys that were pretty in deep with the
yeah, who
Colts.
said it was I mean, he's a Colts beat reporter with A to Z Sports,
Yeah.
and said
Yeah.
that it's done. It's going to be a third round pick and a pick in 2025. It's over. And then Stephen Holder came out and said, not only is it not over, there's
It
nothing in
hasn't
place,
started.
and it hasn't started, and it probably won't start, and it's probably not going to happen.
Yeah.
So just a really strange couple of weeks on the L'Jarius Sneed front, and really hard to see how it's going to shake out.
It's strange from the football perspective, just thinking about what you think the Chiefs should or shouldn't or will or won't do, because there's really no easy, correct answer there. And then it's strange because we consume these breaking news reports like crack every single offseason and all the time. I mean, anytime one of these people tweets some rumor, everyone's all over it. But most of the time, like by the time it gets to the point where these people are tweeting it, as you said, it's because it's done. Now they're not as done as the newsbreakers, but they are certainly the people staking their reputation on these news stories are pretty sure that things have happened that have turned out to apparently not have happened, or maybe someone deep within the talks, whether it's Sneed, whether it's the teams, what have you, like maybe they had an instant complete change of heart and they tried to reverse all the conversations and stuff that they've had. It's impossible for us to know what happened, but it's strange considering normally these things are pretty cut and dry, and we usually don't have this drama behind, oh, I think this is happening. No, I think this is happening. And like that just doesn't usually happen with NFL news. So that's been weird. What do you think about what the Chiefs should do in this Sneed situation?
Well, it's tough because they obviously they went to the Bank of Mahomes and they restructured that contract, and they freed up some money. They really can't reasonably keep him on the tag for 2024 with the cap money that they currently have. They're pretty tight against the cap now, once you add in Hollywood Brown's contract and the fact that they're going to need to sign their draft class. And we know from past experience that Brett Veach likes to keep a little money in the hopper for, the
For
late
rainy day
season,
fund.
mid-season veteran edition, rainy day fund, exactly.
Yeah.
So they really probably would have to clear up a little bit more money from some additional restructures, which they could do if he was going to play on the tag. I think that they're still in a good position where they have, really frankly, all the leverage, because
Yeah.
we know from it, notwithstanding the fact that Chris Jones sat out a game last year and then turned around and got an extension this year, and played hardball and sat out all of training camp, and in the end
Yeah.
got what he wanted, much to our chagrin. Notwithstanding that, I mean, it doesn't seem like Sneed has indicated that it doesn't seem like he's unwilling to play on the franchise
I
tag.
agree.
So it seems like he'd be happy to come back as a Chief. What I was going to say about, this source off, what makes this situation a little bit bass ackwards, is that they've given him permission to seek a trade. So
Yeah.
he and his representation, in a situation that normally would be tampering to negotiate with other teams when you're under contract with an NFL organization, it's not. They can contact these teams directly, and they can be negotiating a contract even if those teams haven't made a trade off for the Chiefs, or even if they
Right.
haven't talked to the Chiefs. And so it is a little bit unusual that, I mean, the Colts might be interested in trading for him, but, there's maybe not any point in them having conversations with the Chiefs until they figure out whether they can afford what Sneed is asking for. I mean, I'd be perfectly happy to bring him back on the tag if they can move the money around and
Yeah,
have
me
it make
too.
sense. I think the question, and Platinum Sombrero, one of the elite Twitter followers out there,
Yes.
put this somewhat jestingly. But like it is actually completely 100% true. The dilemma here for the Chiefs really comes down to, do they want the best chance to three-peat, which no team has ever done, which clearly involves bringing back Legarius Sneed for 2024, or do they want a chance to win the most Super Bowls ever, which might, involve trading Legarius Sneed, getting some of that cap money back to sign a few more free agents, getting some draft capital
Mix.
back
Yeah.
to be able to continue to build depth and make this thing completely 100% sustainable going forward. And I don't know. That's a
Yeah.
long-winded way of saying I don't know what the right answer is.
And it's a great problem to have. It's the best problem anyone's ever had in sports, really, is do you want to three-peat now or do you want to win all the titles in the next, or you could do both. You could also do both. You could just continue to constantly win no matter what you do, which is what the Chiefs seem to be doing. I want to take this opportunity to plug a new person that I started following on Twitter called Chiefs Cap Man, and very similar to Chiefs Bearcat and some of the other good cap experts that are on Twitter. But Chiefs Cap Man, and it's at Chiefs Cap Man, just constantly all it is an account that tracks the Chiefs' current salary cap after they make moves. He has a great he or she or them have a great
Or it
breakdown.
could be a bot.
Yeah, it could be a bot. It certainly could be a bot. And these days it probably is. Have a great breakdown of the current cap space and including after allocating for 8.3 million in the draft class. And they say that the Chiefs still have an effective cap after the draft of $6.4 million over. So, I mean, of spending money, not under. So, I think you're right that the Chiefs have the leverage because they are not in the situation that some of these NFL teams have found themselves in lately, where they have to make a move and everyone knows they have to make a move. Then you have no leverage. They say, if you don't do this, you're not cap compliant. You're not going to be able to start the season. Like, we know you want to get rid of this guy and we're going to lowball you. The Chiefs can totally go into next season with Sneed under the cap and are under the tag. And now it's just a matter of, is the asking price for the Chiefs going to be enough to flip Sneed? Which, then there are the rumors of the Colts were offering like a third and a later pick. And is that worth it for the Chiefs? And then, is Sneed asking for way too much money? Did the trade get done? But then Sneed went to go negotiate with the Colts or whoever, the Titans, and said, yeah, I want to be the number one paid cornerback in the NFL. And they go, well, I don't know if you're quite that good enough to be. So there's just so many weird balls in play right now.
There's
But
one other variable too that
what's
we
that?
haven't brought up, which is his health. And there's been
Correct.
the reporting, consistent reporting that his knee that was causing him some issues off and on last year obviously didn't really cost him any playing time, but was affecting him during practice. And there was some load management going on with the Chiefs. And there's
Yeah.
been some speculation that the reluctance to make him the highest paid cornerback in the NFL doesn't have anything to do with his play, which obviously is elite, and he had an amazing all-pro type season last
Yeah.
year, even though he was completely snubbed. But the fact
Yeah.
that they don't really trust the long-term health of that knee, in which case, from the Chiefs' perspective, bringing him back for one more year on the franchise tag makes all the sense in the world if they can make that work with what else they want to do on the roster and move some money around and have the flexibility that they need to have, even while having the 20 mil guaranteed that the franchise tag takes up. But
So
that's a factor. That's a factor too.
you're saying that the other teams do trust L'Jarius Sneed. They don't trust L'Jarius Sneed. Blah.
Really good. Just to recap really quick to close out the news here, you put together a handy little chart of all of the subtractions and additions and lateral moves. Why
Yeah,
don't
it's
you run through those for us?
sure. So just to recap what's happened so far with the roster, the Chiefs that signed on other teams, guard Nick Allegretti went to the Commanders on a 3-year, $16 million deal. Great for Nick. Super big warrior, obviously played through the elbow issues and was able to still play in the playoffs. So
And
great.
deserves a chance to start.
And deserves a chance to start, and we'll get it with the Commanders. So that's nice. And then punter Tommy Townsend, who also has been a great Chief, Legolas, RIP to that nickname because he was the best. He signed with the Texans, 2-year, $6 million deal. Tight end Jody Fortson did catch on with the Dolphins for 1-year, $1.2 million. Mike Edwards just recently this week signed with the Bills for a 1-year deal, no money disclosed yet. And Willie Gay, who we all of course love and will miss, only signed a 1-year deal with the Saints, which I thought was a little interesting because I thought that he was young enough and had played well enough on a good high profile team and a high profile successful defense that I just would have expected Willie Gay to have cashed in this offseason. So maybe he didn't like offers and decided to go re-roll the dice again next offseason. But I thought that was, I don't know if his offseason or his off-field stuff had anything to do with that or not. But the re-signed Chiefs, the Chiefs that were free agents that the team brought back, obviously Chris Jones was the big one, the number one free agent on everyone's board this offseason. 5 years, $158 million, effectively 3 for 95. James Winchester, the one of the other very long tenured Chiefs, 2 years, 2.8 million. Turk Wharton, 1 year, 2.7. Deion Bush, 1 year, 1.4. Mike Pinnell, 1 year, 1.2. Derek Nnadi, 1 year, no money disclosed. He's the most recent re-signing. And then, of course, the two new Chiefs, the aforementioned Jody Fortson, when he left, opened up tight end three, and Irv Smith's going to slide right into that 1 year, $1.3 million. And then the big one that everyone was really excited about, Hollywood Brown, 1 year, $7 million, up to 11 in guarantees. That is the roster ins and outs so far this offseason.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head. I mean, Willie Gay is really like the only one of the players the Chiefs let go that I kind of was like, well,
Yeah.
I mean, for that amount of money, I wouldn't have minded bringing him back at all. I certainly get the desire to, let him test the market, and he may just think that a change of scenery going and playing into different defense might give him the opportunity to elevate his profile a little bit. We did leave off Drew Tranquil, obviously
Yes.
re-signed. He's returned
Yes.
to the Chiefs. Big re-signing there. And then, it's interesting that the two additions so far are both 1 year contracts, Hollywood and Irv Smith, and both guys that I think can benefit from, a 1 year prove it deal. But it's going to be interesting to see if those two guys can stay healthy and, be productive. And if they do, it's a great problem to have because, you can always re-sign those players. You have the ability to negotiate an extension with them before they go to free agency.
Right.
And if they're not productive, you're not on the hook for anything beyond this year. Let's talk about,
What is happening?
oh boy. Well, we've kind of neglected our quote unquote rivals in
Rivalry,
the AFC West
rivalry.
rivalry. We've kind of neglected them because we were busy winning the Super Bowl and bringing back Chris Jones and signing Hollywood Brown and doing all this cool stuff. But since this was sort of a quieter week, we wanted to take the opportunity to catch up with the Broncos, Raiders, and Chargers and dunk on them a little bit. So let's start with the Broncos, everybody's favorite whipping boy. They lost, of course, Russell Wilson cut. He ended up signing with the Steelers for league minimum. Broncos are on the hook for all of his
$39 million.
$39 million that he's going to be making.
Idiots.
They traded Jerry Jeudy to the Browns for a fifth and a sixth round pick, which, depending on who you believe, they had a firm offer for a third round pick during the season and chose not to trade him. And they were asking for a second round pick. And then they decided to just trade him away for a fifth and a sixth. They had to release Justin Simmons to get cap compliant. They're picking 12th in the draft. And let me tell you, this is a dire situation for the Broncos. Like, first of all, the only quarterback on their roster currently is Jarrett Stidham, who is on a 1 year deal. He has 1 year left on his contract, and he's Jarrett Stidham. So those are both not they do both do not bode well for his long term future as the starter of the Broncos. They're picking 12th. And the team directly ahead of them, the Broncos for, I don't know, leading up to the combine, really for the last month and a half, have been linked to JJ McCarthy, the Michigan quarterback, who is kind of viewed, I'd say consensus, he certainly is QB3 or QB4 in this draft, but a lot of teams really like him. He's kind of been shooting up, the board through the draft process, the pedigree, the intangibles, whatever. People like him. And the Broncos are one of those teams. And, for a while it seemed like, JJ McCarthy, he's not a first round talent. Maybe he'll go, at the end of the first round, not anymore. And now it seems like if the Broncos want JJ McCarthy as QB4 in this draft, they will have to trade up. The problem is they're picking 12th and the team picking 11th also loves JJ McCarthy, the Minnesota Vikings, and they recently acquired a second first round pick. So they have more draft capital to be able to move up to take JJ McCarthy or whoever at quarterback. And the Broncos here are sitting here at 12 with, I mean, literally like no plan, like none at all. Like, wouldn't it have made sense for them to send a sixth round pick to the Steelers for Justin Fields? Like, couldn't they have given Justin Fields enough playing time, 51% of the snaps, and sent a fourth round pick that way, whatever it would be? Wouldn't they have made sense for, a 1 year deal for Sam Darnold or one of these other, former top prospects that they could maybe throw out there for 17 games to see what they got? Sure, but they didn't do any of that, and now they are screwed.
Well, what What I would want to do if I were either in charge of the Broncos or a Broncos fan is probably try and get the number one pick next year. If I could,
sure.
Except I believe I don't have their draft board in front of me, but isn't that the Sean Payton pick next year? Their first round?
Oh, that was their pick that they got from Miami. So
okay.
They will have their
so
own.
So they will have their own.
They will have their own pick next year. Yep.
So I would want to, if I were them, just take it a year off. And
sure.
You know that you're not going to be able to do anything important anyway. But the problem with that is that you brought Sean Payton in to be a Band-Aid, to be a instant fix for what was going on. And if he comes in and has 2 years in a row, like last year and coming up this year, and they get a first or second pick overall, I don't know how he survives that. I don't know how the team doesn't run him out of the building.
Sure.
With
sure.
that type of track record. And plus, remember, they did trade the first round pick that I was talking about for Sean Payton. So, like, he was supposed to come in and be the reason that they immediately came back to contention. So, like, I don't know, if you can't tank and you can't win, what are you? How do you succeed?
I mean, this is I'm going to give ourselves a pat on the back here because I mean, we predicted this almost to the letter. A year
classic
ago,
category one, to quote Nick Wright.
A year ago, when Sean Payton was traded to the Broncos, you know, we said, look, Sean Payton is a good coach, but he's not elite.
Mm-hmm.
Russell Wilson is washed, and
mm-hmm.
Sean Payton's not going to be able to fix him. But Sean Payton is good enough that the Broncos are not going to be picking in the top five.
Correct.
Because he's good enough, you know, at coaching and at the margins that they will be around 500. They're not going to be good enough to be a playoff team. They're not going to be bad enough to get an elite draft pick.
They're in purgatory. They're
not going to be able to fix Russell Wilson. And all of those things came to pass. And it's literally a dream scenario for us as Chiefs fans, especially for me living in Colorado.
Yes,
because this team is just Lindsay Jones, who works for The Ringer.
Yeah.
Was on one of their pods this week, and she lives in Denver and covers the Broncos, are technically her hometown team. She's a journalist, so you know, I don't know. But I think she was also a former beat reporter there, and she was saying she took her daughter to school for like Jersey Day this week, and she didn't see a single Broncos jersey. And, like, the point that she made was like, whose jersey would you even have?
Right.
Like, what jersey are you going to buy? Like, Pat Surtain is their best player, I guess, but like, you're going to buy a cornerback jersey and like, he might get traded at some point because they don't have a quarterback. And
when he's on his fifth year, or they picked up his,
he hasn't been extended yet. So like, I mean, who knows? They may not even extend him. You'd think that they'd at least trade him if they weren't going to, but I mean,
and who wants to wear a Broncos jersey right now?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
You
that's
know,
the embarrassing thing. It's not even the name on the front, the back.
No.
Like, let alone the name on the front.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't want to wear that.
Nope.
It's rough. Let's move on to the Raiders because the Broncos are a total pit of despair, but the Raiders are not, they're really not in better shape at all. They did make a big splash in free agency, which is something that the Broncos have not done. They've been extremely quiet. They signed Christian Wilkins for 4 years, $110 million, best interior defensive pass rusher on the market after the Chiefs, of course, re-signed Chris Jones, who's in a different tier, different stratosphere. I mean, he's the best now that Aaron Donald's retired. So
yes, correct.
Undisputed number one best interior defensive lineman in the NFL at this point.
Might have been even with Aaron Donald still coming back next
year.
Yeah,
right, I mean, exactly. Aaron Donald's
clearly
got the gears on him, little bit more mileage than Chris.
Yeah.
But Jimmy Garoppolo gone, backing up Matt Stafford in Los Angeles.
Yep.
They brought in Gardner Minshew.
I was just going to say Jimmy G also got suspended 2 games for screwing up his medication. So he's gone and suspended. They really whiffed on that. That was a mega deal that they gave Jimmy G, and he played 6 games for him.
Yeah, just unbelievable. They let Josh Jacobs walk. He's now a Packer. They released Hunter Renfro, who's still out there on the market. And they signed Gardner Minshew. So at least they brought in a quarterback. I mean, I wouldn't say that Gardner Minshew's great, but at least he's probably better than he's almost certainly better than Jarrett Stidham.
Yeah,
right?
For
like,
sure.
I mean, he's got to be better than Jarrett Stidham and Aiden O'Connell, who is the other quarterback on the Raiders roster. So at least they have two quarterbacks on their roster, and one of them is Gardner Minshew, who's not good, but he's not, you know, he's not
he's
Jarrett
fun.
Stidham.
He's okay.
So, you know, he's fine. He's got the mustache and the personality and you know, Max Crosby called him a little boy and
the last boy.
That was an entertaining clip to rewatch. But listen, this team also needs a quarterback. And this team is picking 13th. They're one spot behind the Broncos.
Oof.
So they have the exact same problem that the Broncos have, which is that they need a quarterback. but they're not picking high enough to get a quarterback. And if they want to move up, there's a couple of other teams that are already ahead of them that clearly want or need a quarterback. Most obviously, the Vikings.
Yeah, and the Vikings have the ammo to do it. The Raiders would have to really get creative if they were trying to move up to that. You know, like Arizona's picking at four. They're a common trade destination. If they don't want to pick Marvin Harrison, then they, you know, you would assume that the top three picks, who have all let their quarterbacks go. Chicago obviously did, New England did, and Washington did. All those, so all three of them are locked into quarterbacks. I would be shocked if any of those three decided to do anything else other than quarterback with the top three picks. So now, you know, Arizona can either go best player available, and then you've got the Chargers sitting at five. And so what do the Cardinals? It's just really interesting, but the Raiders and the Broncos basically have no chance to get up there and get JJ McCarthy. None. I mean, they don't have the ammo to do it. They have more motivated teams in front of them that would rather do it. It's a mess for them right now.
Yeah, it is because listen, I mean, you know, like you said, maybe New England could be moved off of that spot, but I mean, they certainly need a quarterback, and they're picking third. So, you know, if you wanted to go up from 12th to third, that's about how far the Niners moved up to take Trey Lance, and they gave up like three first round picks to do that, right? So,
Yes. And that worked out really well for them.
right, exactly. Not a realistic scenario for the Raiders or Broncos. I mean, I would love it if that happened. That would be incredible. It would be so juicy to take the third quarterback in the draft. Or, you know, the Cardinals, they have Kyler Murray and they seem committed to Kyler Murray. They
They
have
do.
another first round pick at the end of the first round that they got from the Texans. And, you know, they're going to have probably Marvin Harrison Jr. on the board and their pick of, you know, the best non-quarterback in the draft, because probably quarterbacks are going to go with the first three picks. That's going to be a pretty juicy spot, and they're probably not going to want to move out of that spot. But if they do, it's going to be harder for the Broncos or Raiders to get there because they're going to have to give up more, and the Vikings have, you know, better capital to be able to make that move. And then in fifth, you know, the Chargers, I could certainly see the Chargers wanting to move back because they have Herbert. You know,
Yeah,
they have a lot of holes
agreed.
on the roster. But like, are the Chargers going to trade with the Broncos or the Raiders?
No, they
No.
shouldn't.
Jim
And
Harbaugh?
also, the Chargers, you know, this is a really deep wide receiver class, but the top of the wide receiver class is so juicy that, and the Chargers just, we'll talk about them, but they need a receiver too. So I don't even
Yeah, they
think,
do.
even if
Right.
they would deal with the Broncos and the Raiders, I don't know if that trade makes a lot of sense from the Chargers' perspective. So,
Right.
like, I don't see this thing happening for the Raiders or the Broncos.
I just don't see it happening either. And again, like, you know, the Raiders, I could see the Raiders hitting rock bottom. Let's be honest. That's not
For
hard. It's not
them,
hard to imagine the Raiders being the worst team in the
they've
NFL
lived at
because
rock bottom for 2 decades.
we've seen it many times. And, you know, Antonio Pierce is out here talking nonsense about how they have a formula to beat the Chiefs. And, you know, I mean, that's never gone well for people in the past. But, you know, the Broncos, I just don't see them with Sean Payton being willing or able to be the worst team in the NFL in 2024.
I
And
agree.
I just, it's going to leave them in a very tough spot. You'd love to see it. Let's go to the Chargers really quick because, as you mentioned, they got a little bit of a hole at wide receiver because they had four players who were in the top 12 cap hit for the 2024 season. Of course, was their pass rushers, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack, and then their wide receivers, Keenan Allen and Mike Williams. And we knew this was coming. We saw this last year because they tweaked all of those guys' contracts last year when they
Yeah,
were in cap
they
trouble
went all in.
to yeah, exactly, to, you know, kick the can down the road for one more season. There was a reckoning, there was writing on the wall, and their approach to this appears to have been not to keep the best players, not to keep the most valuable players or the youngest players and the most productive players, but simply to keep the players that were willing to rework their contracts to take slightly less money and to continue to remain on the roster to plague the Chargers cap hit in future years. And that was the two pass rushers, Joey Bosa and Khalil Mack. And I mean, if you just look at Khalil Mack's raw numbers last year, they look really good. Like, this was like, oh, major bounce back season for Khalil Mack. You know, he ended up with 17 sacks for Khalil Mack.
That's
Okay.
one a game, man.
Except it wasn't one a game. It
Six
actually,
and one.
yeah, it was actually six in one game
Oh
against
my
the
God.
Las
Aiden
Vegas
O'Connell,
Raiders.
right? I think it
Yeah,
was.
exactly right. It was a revenge game against the Raiders, six sacks in that game. And then, you know, it was 11 in the other 16 games. So, you know, a little bit
Not
more
quite as
modest.
good.
They got rid of Keenan Allen, traded him to the Bears for a fourth round pick. Mike Williams cut. He signs with the Jets. Austin Eckler gone. I mean, this offense has been gutted from a
Got
skill
it.
player perspective. They've got Quentin Johnson, who looked like a total bust last year. They've got your guy Josh Palmer, right?
Yeah, that's right. Wide
He's
receiver one,
like
baby.
the default wide receiver one there
He
now.
is not
And
default. He's gonna do it. No, he's terrible.
you know what's crazy about this is there are two or three, depending on how you feel about Rome Odunze and Malik
Yeah.
Nabers, in addition to Marvin Harrison in this draft at wide receiver, generational wide receiver prospects, really, really good at the top of the class, as you alluded to. I don't know, John or Jim. I don't know if Jim Harbaugh is going to take a wide receiver with the fifth overall pick. He's like
I don't
run the
either.
ball, pound the rock. You
Yeah,
know, they
he's
were
going to pick a
always,
tackle.
Greg Roman is their offensive coordinator. You know, like,
We're never going to hear Justin Herbert's name ever again.
they
And he's going to
clearly
play.
should take a wide receiver,
Yeah, they
and
should.
maybe they will. And maybe we'll have to deal with, you know, Marvin Harrison Jr., you know, catching passes from Justin Herbert for the next 15 years.
The
But they might
pantomime.
not. They might not do it.
It's a really interesting scenario for them because, the other funny thing about these teams that get behind the eight ball, as all these teams are, is like they don't realize it until long after we realize it, right? Like they think that they're hot shit and that they're going to contend and that they're
Oh,
really
yeah.
good. And then they run up against the buzzsaw that is the actual reality of the situation. And then they limp into the offseason and they try and think, well, we just gotta go all in again. Like it's just so funny to watch this kind of delusion that all these teams go through. And the Chargers, I don't
Nobody
know.
gets hit. Nobody gets hit harder by reality than the Chargers.
No, reality has been unkind to them for an extremely long time. And they're gonna go into this thing. I know they are, and they're gonna say, we got the best coaching hire in the offseason. We got this young quarterback that's just never gotten lucky because of stupid whatever decisions they are gonna try and get into. And then they're gonna have the fifth overall pick and they're gonna try and do something interesting with it, whether that's trading it or drafting someone. But either way, they're gonna go into next year as the preseason AFC West champions, as they have for the
Sure.
last 10 years in a row or whatever it's been. And then they're just going to get pimp slapped all season long because they're not good and they've gotten worse and they weren't even good in the first place.
Right.
And like, it's just really, it's amusing to me to see how they're going to turn this. Like they have some pressure on them with the Jim Harbaugh hire to like do something this year, like immediately. Like if you don't
Sure.
really bring in a national champion head coach from college and say, well, we're going to take a couple years to really figure this thing out. Like he was a splash hire for them. And they've got a quarterback that I would imagine 22 to 25 offense or teams in the NFL would wish that they would rather have. Like Justin Herbert's a very talented quarterback who's not even 500 in his career. Like they're a complete enigma, and I can't wait to see them continue to charger their way into infutility for the future.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be incredible to see what they end up doing. They are, you know, at least, listen, at least they've got a good quarterback and something interesting to do in the draft, which is more than we can say about
Yeah, the
either of
other
the other
two.
two
Yeah.
teams in the AFC West. So, congratulations, Chargers. You know, you're going to earn those preseason AFC West champ predictions this year. Let's turn to the next great American dynasty. Now, for those of you unfamiliar, because we just started this project last week, our goal here, the vision behind this is to recap every playoff game in the Patrick Mahomes era. And the title, of course, derives from the fact that this is a journey to where we find ourselves now, which is cheering for one of the few, you can count them on one hand, dynasties in National Football League history. What's wild about this project is that there are only three losses in this project,
Yes,
which is
correct.
highly desirable and certainly one of the things that pushed us towards selecting this over some other options for off-season content. Unfortunately, we do have to reach one of those three losses today, but I will say that this one, especially after rewatching it, was by far the easiest of the three to digest. That doesn't mean that it was easy. The Chiefs hosting the AFC Championship game as the one seed against Tom Brady and the New England Patriots. Obviously, the Chiefs fall in this game in overtime, 37 to 31. Before we get into the system that we have for losses, some of you may remember it. We did not. We had to dust it off and bring it back out because it's been a while since the Chiefs have lost a game. Let's talk a little bit before we get into that about what this game meant. What you remember about the lead up to it, where you were watching it, what you were thinking going into the AFC Championship game.
Yeah, it was a really exciting time. extremely exciting. I mean, certainly with Mahomes coming off the 50 and 5,000 year, and with this being, you know, the first shot that that I felt as a Chiefs fan that the Chiefs had to go to the Super Bowl since realistically since 2003. They had had more shots since then, I guess technically, because they had more playoff appearances since then. But like, you never really felt it since 03 that like, oh, this team could actually go win a Super Bowl. And despite the defensive struggles in 2018, the offense was so ahead of the game that you just felt like, give these guys a chance and it could happen. It certainly could happen. And so I was all excitement. Brady and the Patriots were still Brady and the Patriots at this point, obviously.
Sure,
It's
right.
2018, you know, they had won, Brady had won five rings going into this game, and it was just kind of, you know, you might as well take a shot. If you're going to go win a Super Bowl, you might as well go through the champ to do it. Like, that didn't really bother me too much. The Chiefs played a 43-40 barn burner in New England earlier that season, so you knew they could play with them. You knew it wasn't going to be some ass kicking.
Absolutely.
So that's really where I was at. I was excited. I was confident. If anything, it was all still new to like be in the AFC Championship game. I hadn't been in the AFC Championship game as a fan since I was six. So that whole aspect of being one game away from the Super Bowl kind of overtook everything else for me.
It was crazy. I mean, just to like to think back to where we were as Kansas City sports fans. I mean, like
Love this.
obviously the Royals 2014, 2015, you go to the World Series, you lose game seven, you come back the following year, you win the World Series. But baseball is just such a different sport from football, and it not only does it fail to dominate the national consciousness in the way that the NFL does, it just like because it's, you know, three, five, seven game series in the playoffs, you know, unless you get to an elimination game in one of these rounds, it just doesn't dial up the same drama
Yeah, there's
that
always tomorrow. Yeah.
a single elimination tournament does, and appropriate that we're talking about that on the first day of March Madness. But
Yes, correct.
this was the first AFC Championship game ever at Arrowhead Stadium. It was their first game or their first appearance in the AFC Championship game, like you said, since 1993 when Joe Montana took on the Bills. And here on the other side, you have Tom Brady, Bill Belichick, five rings, you know, going for number six. They had just lost the Super Bowl the year before to the Eagles, Nick Foles, Big Dick Nick. Shout out Eagles. Ka-ka! Go, go Birds.
Go Birds.
And had just beaten the Falcons the year before that. So they were going for their third straight Super Bowl appearance and second Super Bowl win in 3 years. And really, like, I mean, you just felt that mix of emotions, right? Like you had hung with the Patriots earlier that year. They gave Mahomes his first loss in Foxborough, when Tom Brady got the ball last, and you know the Chiefs couldn't stop him from getting the go-ahead field goal. They win that game 43-40. You know, you have this team, like the greatest dynasty in the history of the NFL, coming to your house. But this is a team that, I mean, on the one hand, like that's scary. It's a scary situation. On the other hand, the Patriots have gone 11-5. They look kind of washed. You know, a lot of the time, a lot of the year, you know, Brady's whatever he was at the time, 40, 41.
Sure, 50,
And,
whatever.
you know, the Chiefs have had some success against Brady. I mean, obviously, famously, the year before, 2017, gone into Foxborough on opening night after they were, you know, getting their Super Bowl rings and beat the hell out of them with Alex Smith, the quarterback, Mahomes' first game on an NFL sideline. And, you know, a couple years before that, in 2014, when the Royals were playing in the wild card game the next night, beat the hell out of Tom Brady at Arrowhead, of 40 whatever it was, 40 something to 14.
On to
And
Cincinnati.
yeah, exactly. And so a lot of mixed emotions, obviously. This one was it was funny. I was reflecting on this game, and this was before. It's just so funny to look back on how different our lives were,
Yes.
7 5 years ago,
Agreed.
as sports fans. Like, I had not contemplated the fact that like Chiefs could be playing for a chance to go to the Super Bowl. I was in Hawaii. I was on vacation with my family, and so I watched this game at like 2 in the afternoon or whatever Hawaii time, 1 o'clock, might have been a 1 o'clock kickoff. We were on Maui, and just, you know, in a sports bar, you know, overlooking the beach. You know, it was sunny and beautiful, even though it was horrible and miserable and disgusting, in Kansas City. And you know, it was neutral territory, which is, as you know, not my preferred way to
No.
watch a football game. I
Not
prefer to be
anybody's, or it should
surrounded
be.
by zero dissenters.
Yeah,
It should be
correct.
only it should be only people on the same side. I don't want people chirping at me. I don't want people, getting me down in the dumps. So I had to watch this at a neutral site because I would never have contemplated or thought about or certainly had the gall to actually plan my schedule around a possible Chiefs AFC Championship game with a Super Bowl appearance on the line. And, 5 years later, my thinking is a little bit different.
Yeah, it was just the whole adventure of going to not only the first playoff, but first of all, the fact that the Chiefs had the bye meant that all it took was one home win against the Colts, and the Chiefs were in the AFC title game, which we talked about
Right,
last week,
exactly.
which was just such a shot in the arm for the franchise to just immediately, because of how good the regular season was, to be that close to a championship right off the bat. And so that was really fun. But that's really where going into this game, I remember this game was cold and I didn't go, but I was certainly like as fired up for this one and just to see how the Chiefs would measure up one more time against the greatest dynasty in sports history. And it didn't quite live up to it at first, but it did by the end.
Let's return to the MAC for those of you who don't remember this, which included us until, about 30 minutes before we hopped on to record.
Yeah.
The MAC is our system for losses. We have a system for wins. It's the Chiefs system. It's a system the Chiefs follow whenever they win an NFL football game. The MAC, on the other hand, is our system for losses. It's, of course, derived from the MAC system, movement after completion. Ours is mourn. We process our emotions, accuse, where we apportion blame for the loss, and then cope, which is where we sort of try and, look for the positives, the silver linings, the sun under the cloud. And so we're going to bring back the MAC system. Fortunately, we only have to do this two more times this offseason. And that means we're going to start with mourning. And we'll kind of go through the ins and outs of this game through the system that we've developed to discuss it. But when we talk about mourning, I guess we just have to start with the obvious. When Charvarius Ward intercepted Tom Brady with a minute left in regulation and the Chiefs leading by four, I thought for probably 25 to 40 seconds that the Chiefs were going to the Super Bowl because, my immediate reaction as soon as you see the interception, it's like that's game. We take a knee, the game is over, they have the lead. And because I was in a public place, like a bar, you can't hear the audio, and that usually is the first indication. Nancy Romo will see the flag first and usually call that out. And so, I'm high-fiving my family, I'm screaming, we're going to the Super Bowl, and then
They were
he
not.
poured.
And then offsides 55 defense. It was one of the, I mean, I guess I'll say the most consequential penalty in Chiefs history. And there really weren't words to describe. It wasn't the final play of the game, but it would have been if the penalty wasn't called. So it's about as close as you get to a penalty costing you at least an AFC title. Probably a Super Bowl because let's face it, the Rams weren't ready to play whoever was coming out of the AFC that year.
Correct.
But the emotions involved with that were also at the same time, after the flag, you still have third and five with 54 seconds left and could have, being up four at the time, like still stopped them and still won the game after that flag. But it did feel either the air was sucked out of the defense or not, because the next play was immediately deep left to Gronk for 25 yards after that flag. So it did just they the Patriots just jumped on it. They did what the Chiefs do now, which is if you give them an opening, you give them an inch, they take a mile. I mean, that's why the Patriots were, so successful, because you just couldn't get away with doing shit like that against them. And I mean, I was devastated. This is the best mourn segment. Like, this is the single biggest mourn play that the Chiefs have ever had in their whole history of their franchise. And it was tough. I got to this point, and Kind of chuckled through it. We'll talk about why later on in the cope segment, but still pretty raw, still sucked.
Yeah, I mean, it's certainly, I mean, I already said, like, looking forward to the other two losses that we're going to have to recap in this offseason. This one was the easiest to process, and yet still, when I rewatch the game, I mean, like, the emotion is still there. I can still
Yes,
turn it
I
up.
agree.
Like,
I agree. I was screaming when they called that 15-yarder on Chris
because we hadn't
Jones,
gone
and
to the
I
Super
mean,
Bowl in 49 years, and we hadn't advanced to that point in 30 years, and we hadn't, I mean, like, to think for 30 seconds that you're going to the Super Bowl for the first time in your life, and then to have that cruelly snatched away because Dee Ford doesn't know how to line up on sides. I mean, the worst part, I guess I don't know if it's better or worse that he clearly was offsides, and that's clearly a penalty that will get called, right? Like, it's not like the Kadarius Toney offensive offsides that never gets called. Like, I mean, if you,
Although there are
yeah,
some parallels. I
there are some
mean,
parallels. There are. That's true. I mean,
you
it doesn't
heard
get
people
called every
talk about
time.
how, like, after that game, the Chiefs would talk about how, like, yeah, most of the time, if a guy lines up like that, like, the refs are going to kind of give
I
you, I
know.
mean, like Andy said
They'll give
that
you
at
a
the
heads up.
time, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. They'll tell you, hey, 55 is lining up a little bit too close. I mean, they'll do kind of the similar situation that we, again, complained about with Tony, but at least when you look on the replay and you see Dee Ford lined offside, it wasn't like the refs blew a call and
Right.
called him offsides and he wasn't offsides, like you're
Oh, they
saying.
blew
At
plenty of
least it
calls,
was
but we'll
an
talk about that in the next
objective,
segment.
well, correct, not this call. And so at least it was
Right.
objectively offsides. And, you know, compared to those other two losses, this is like a single play losing the game. Whereas
Yeah,
those other
exactly.
two
Right.
losses, like
Right.
you kind of just look at the whole picture of what happened there and be like, well, Chiefs didn't have it and didn't bring it and lost focus or whatever. And all these different plays in those other two games caused the loss. This one, the game was won. Like they
Yeah.
had the game. That's
Right.
what hurt the most for me.
You know, we'll get through the rest of our morning
Okay.
segments, but a little transition from that to, I mean, not only that, but like think about what it would have meant, and we did think about this at the time, and now we're thinking about it again, like what it would have meant to pick off Tom Brady with a minute left in the AFC Championship game to go to the Super
Jesus
Bowl. I mean,
Christ.
like, you know, maybe that's the end of the Patriots dynasty and we don't have to suffer through that fuck winning two more rings, right? Like, yeah, this was the first Brady Mahomes playoff matchup. It was their second matchup overall. You know, Mahomes falls to 0-2, and Brady gets to go to another Super Bowl, and he wins it, you know, with 10 points because
13 to
it's, you know,
3, right?
exactly. Or
Yeah.
yeah, 13 to 3,
By
whatever it
10.
was. Yeah, right. I actually did think that it was 10 to 3, the game.
Yeah, it was 13-3. But it might as well. It doesn't
For
matter.
sure.
13
It
points in
doesn't
the Super
matter.
Bowl.
They scored the other team scored 3 points. He didn't
Yeah.
have to do anything in that
Nope.
game.
And he
So
didn't.
it just was like that, and the fact that the Patriots were like, you could see the end of the Patriots dynasty in sight. Like it was
Yes.
in view. Like you
Yes.
knew that the time was coming to an end where Tom Brady would be gone out of our lives. Who knew that it would take quite
Three
so
more
long,
years, but yeah.
quite so long after this game, and
Yeah.
that he'd win, unfortunately, two more rings, including one over Pat. But like the opportunity was so good. And to literally have the game won only to have it called back on a flag. Ugh. Oof.
Yeah,
Tough.
the Brady v. Mahomes stuff, you know, as we will talk about the next time we have to do the MAC system, there's such an inflection point in like the grand scheme of the NFL. They are, as we talked about before the Bucs Super Bowl, because we were doing the pod by then, that was like the biggest game in NFL history,
Yep, it
was
was.
Brady v. Mahomes in the Super Bowl. That
It
was, and
was.
this Brady v. Mahomes in a conference title game probably then is the second greatest, biggest
Sure.
deal game in the NFL history. And unfortunately, the Chiefs came up short on both ends of those. But the impact of this, if you think about the alternate reality where the Chiefs win this game, is very like or probable, possible that the Chiefs already have four or five rings right now
Sure.
and already have passed, not just caught, passed Tom Brady
Sure.
in legacy and in all
Yeah.
that stuff. I mean,
Right.
those are the opportunities where you don't just win one, you also win one and take one from the other guy. It's a twofer. It's a
Yep.
two Super Bowl game. And so that's the biggest mourn here, bigger than even the Dee Ford play, is the potential to have already wrapped up the GOAT conversation 5 years after that. Like the potential to have already just leapfrog the greatest team ever and become the greatest quarterback in the greatest team ever. Now, we will talk about why that's not the worst, the end of the world, because there's still that's still on target. Like it's
Yeah,
possible, it's
it's
not off
still
the
well within the
table.
realm of possibility.
But boy, losing to this guy in the playoffs and then having him fuck off before you can beat him in the playoffs is pretty, that's a pretty bitch move by Tom Brady to not give you an opportunity to take it back from him.
There's one other item of mourning on my list, which is the overtime coin toss and losing the overtime coin toss. It's funny that, and when we recap losses, partly because we don't like doing it, we're necessarily going to spend less time talking about the specifics of what happened in the game. But this game had, we were talking before we jumped on, the parallels between this and 13 seconds are like pretty wild, and we don't talk about it enough. Like the fact that this game was 14 to nothing at half and 17 to 14 deep into the third quarter. I mean, I think that was the score at the start of the fourth quarter. And then for this game to be, there were five scores with inside 5 minutes in the fourth quarter in this game, which is absurd. It's
Absurd.
crazy. You're talking about on one side, probably the greatest defensive coach of all time. And, for the Chiefs to score like they did inside of 5 minutes left in this game, I mean, this was such a classic. And, I understand how Bills fans feel about how 13 seconds played out. I mean, the Chiefs having, under a minute left on the not 13 seconds. They had more than that, but under a minute left, down three,
You
ending the drive.
39,
And
that's pretty
yeah,
close.
right. 39 is pretty crazy. There's not very many times in NFL history that a quarterback has had 39 seconds and gotten a game tying field goal. Mahomes has done it in that and then in a third of that time. So, I mean, it's crazy because then, the Chiefs lose the coin toss in this game. And I mean, listen, I knew it was over when we lost the coin toss. Like it was like a slow motion car crash, but like you
I don't know, man. Three third and tens in that
well,
drive.
I
I
get it, but
mean,
like it's Tom Brady, it's sudden death, like I and they did need a touchdown, right, to walk us off.
to walk us off, yes, correct.
But it sucks that Mahomes didn't get the ball in that game. It sucks that Josh Allen didn't get the ball in the 13 seconds game. But I mean, not really, but it sucks that Mahomes didn't get the ball in a game with five lead changes inside of 5 minutes in the fourth quarter. It sucks that Mahomes never got the ball in the fourth quarter. And it sucks that the NFL cared fuck all about that
Correct.
when the Chiefs lost that game and then said, hey, that sucked. Wouldn't it have been way cooler if we had also gotten the ball and had a chance to possess the ball? And we didn't care about that. The fans didn't care about that.
No,
Nobody cared
every
about
other
that.
team laughed at us.
Just
Those are the
ridiculous.
rules, guys. Just suck it up, take your L, move on.
Okay, let's go to accuse here because accusing is fun and the stats were getting to me a little bit there, and I'm going to start by accusing the refs. I mean, listen, we will probably find a way to blame the refs for all three of these losses, but like the refs are really bad in this game. It's
Yes.
actually crazy how, I mean, every single borderline call in this game went against the Chiefs. So there was a critical Chris Hogan catch in the second half
Oh my God.
that was challenged and it didn't look like a catch. It goes against the Chiefs. Of course, the D Ford situation, can't really blame the refs for that because he was offsides, but he kind of can because,
You
like,
kind of can.
don't let it decide the game. And wouldn't it have been so much cooler if Tom Brady gets picked off? And, again, like, it's still a choice to throw the flag. And I get that it's a foul and a flag should be thrown. However, it didn't affect the play at all, right? So, like,
Opposite side of the play.
you have the opportunity. It's not like the Super Bowl where they're throwing a flag for holding,
On
and
the
the Chiefs
play
are
that
kicking
you're
field
throwing it.
goals, because it's the guy who's going to be targeted and he was held and it did fuck up the route, right? So, like, this was not a necessary flag, but the worst call by far in this game. Except for the pass interference on Brady from Chris Jones, which was an absurd call,
Roughing the
but
passer. Yes, that
yeah,
was
roughing the passer.
he
That's what
barely
it is.
touched his
I
shoulder
mean,
and they gave him 15 yards. I mean,
that
that's one of
was
the.
preposterous.
Yes, it
It was
was.
also crazy rewatching this game. There were at least two plays where Mahomes both got roughed and there was pass interference. Like they were just They were just playing street ball. I mean, it was like they were mugging the receiver, they were mugging the quarterback, and there were at least two plays where they got called for both DPI and roughing the passer. And yeah, I mean, it's ridiculous. Fuck the Patriots. But the worst call in this game was the Julian Edelman muff punt, which he clearly touched. I mean, like, and
Can't convince me otherwise.
whether he touched it or not, like the call on the field was that he muffed that punt. Okay. And they went to the video. And if you think the video was inconclusive, congratulations. The call on the field should stand.
Yep.
That's how replay review
That's how it's
works.
always worked.
And at the very least, the replay sure as fuck did not conclusively show that he didn't touch the ball. That was an outrageous, egregious refereeing mistake. Now, of course, ball don't lie. Dan Sorensen gets an interception two plays later, but definitely accusing the refs of gross misfeasance in this game.
Yeah, that moment was that always just kind of stuck out at me. I mean, for a bunch of different reasons, but as just a Patriots got the call that they didn't deserve. And of course, you know, at this time, that was a fourth quarter call that Colquitt punted and the Chiefs were down three and then recovered a ball in what should have been like the 10 or whatever, like deep in Patriots territory. They called it the fumble. And so we're all celebrating again, similar to the D Ford play, thinking like, oh my God, like the Chiefs are now going to go take the lead or at least be able to tie it up. And then when they call it back, like you said, fortunately, Sorensen gets the ball, returns it to about the 23. And then two plays later, the Chiefs score a touchdown. So it didn't end up, I mean, it cost about like a minute of game time, minute and a half of game time. But just the getting away with it, the gall that the refs
Yeah,
had to call
right.
that as a overturn when every single piece of video evidence, like you said, is inconclusive at best,
At
and at
best.
worst shows that he touched it. I mean, there were
Right.
several angles that I saw where I was like, oh, I'm convinced there's no way they don't keep this call. So just a really maddening. I mean, that's as good of an accuse of the refs as any game. You know, that goes down with the Marcus Mariota forward progress.
Sure.
I mean, just these calls that are like, not only are they bad calls, which there you can be fans and argue about whether a call is good or bad or whatever, but they're objectively against the rules, false, not the way the game should be called. And they called that. And
Right.
it infuriated me then, it infuriates me now.
Speaking of infuriating, let's talk about Bob Sutton. You will recall, dear listeners, that last week I chose him as my wild card, and I foreshadowed the reason he was a wild card. It was because his performance against the Colts was so out of character in a positive way. The 26th ranked or 24th ranked DVOA defense that he presided over in the 2020, or excuse me, the 2018 regular season was great against a top 10 defense or a top 10 offense in the Colts, and dominated that game from start to finish and sent Andrew Luck packing into retirement. And, you know, like there was a part of me that really felt that, yeah, it's the Patriots. Yeah, they dropped 43 on us the last time we played them in the regular season, but like maybe we turned a corner. You know, it's a one game sample, but like it's the playoffs.
Yeah,
We've seen this.
Arrowhead. Yeah.
We've seen this with Andy and with Spags. Now, Spags, of course, has a much better track record of actually performing in the playoffs than Bob Sutton did or has. But we've seen this. We had seen this a little bit with Andy Reid. You know, the fact that the guy, you know, the Chiefs had a bye before the Colts, so, you know, a little bit of extra time to prepare for the playoffs. You know, maybe the defense just elevated their game. You know, when the lights are brightest, you know, players step up, coaches step up. You know, they had to understand how big this was for the team and the city. You know, Clark playing for that trophy with my dad's name on it. You know, like just first chance to win the Lamar Hunt Trophy. You know, in your house and host an AFC Championship game, and all that to say that there was a part of me that was unfortunately overly optimistic that Bob Sutton might not completely suck and shit down his leg in this game. And that confidence, that hope was completely, utterly misplaced. I mean, you mentioned the three third and tens in overtime. This was obviously where Tony Romo made his bones, who, by the way, was not very good in this game.
He was not. I
I
agree.
mean, I now that I know what Tony Romo was like all the things that annoy me about Tony Romo now were present in that game. It was just like, because it was new and novel, and I didn't expect him to regress and actually get worse, and he was doing some cool stuff, predicting plays and whatever, I was willing to overlook it then. I did overlook it then. When I went back and watched the game, it was not good. And
it was not.
anyway, I mean, just get a stop. Just get a
Yeah,
stop. I mean,
well,
and one of the stops, they got to stop. They got to stop in
at the one,
Reggie
at the goal
Ragland.
one.
Yeah, when Reggie Ragland, of all people, picks off
Yeah.
Tom Brady. I mean, that doesn't have anything to do with with Bob Sutton, right? Like, that's
No,
just,
that was
that's just
a
Reggie
mistake
Ragland
by the goat,
making a
and
play and Tom
yeah.
Brady making a boneheaded read and throwing it pretty much directly to Reggie. Like, other than
Yeah.
that, they weren't getting stops in this game, and
No,
they weren't doing anything good on defense.
when you look at some of the overall game numbers at the end of it, first downs, the Patriots had 36 compared to only 18, so they doubled them up there. Rush touchdown or yards and touchdowns, the Patriots had 176 yards on the ground and four rushing touchdowns. The Chiefs did not pick up a sack in this game. Total yards, Patriots 524 compared to 290 for the Chiefs. Third down conversions, which you mentioned, not only the three in overtime, the Patriots for the game were 13 of 19 on
It's
third down.
ridiculous.
That type
It's
of
crazy.
conversion, you're never going to win a football game allowing the other team to convert that many third downs, because that turns into time of possession. And time of possession in this game, 44 minutes for the Patriots,
So
21 minutes for the Chiefs. I mean, it was very, very one-sided, and it was not one-sided because of what the Chiefs were doing on offense. It was one-sided because of what the Chiefs were doing on defense, which was letting every single thing possible, just the Patriots just pick it all up. They ate them over the middle of the field. They ate them up when the downs were big. They ate them up in short yardage. They threw over top anytime the Chiefs would over pursue on short yardage. I mean, they did whatever they wanted.
Do you have anybody or anything that you want to accuse before we move on to Cope?
We covered a lot of them. I guess we could just go with fuck Bill Belichick, fuck Tom Brady, fuck clam chowder, fuck the Patriots, fuck Boston, fuck the Celtics. I mean, just whatever. Just, if you're associated, the Red Sox, if you're associated to that franchise, city, fans, team in any way, we hate you. We always will hate you forever.
Oh, on that note, since you said fuck Boston, I did want to just make a little comment that I've been thinking about. Like, I've been listening to the aforementioned Ringer podcast feeds, and I occasionally get ads read by Bill Simmons, and I thankfully had, like, I'm not even joking, almost completely forgotten that the Ringer is a Bill Simmons
Yeah,
joint.
it is.
I
Yeah.
think Bill Simmons is the first person that I muted on Twitter, like, whatever,
Ever.
like, yeah, probably like 8 or 9 years ago, and it is really easy for me to avoid his content,
I
but
agree.
it is very unfortunate that we as a society have permitted so much of sports discourse to be generated by people that come from the city of Boston. Like,
I agree.
all these people that write for, especially in baseball, but in football too, like, Boston churns out a disproportionate number of sports writers, and then they generate the most tiresome, bloated, disgusting discourse on sports that the rest of us have to suffer through. And this game and the aftermath of this game, especially, was no exception. I'm glad that we live in a universe now where at least the football team is completely, wholly irrelevant. Baseball as a sport is fairly irrelevant.
Yeah,
And,
nobody cares about
the
baseball.
NBA, whatever. If the Celtics want to go ball out, good for them. Good for
Yeah,
them.
nobody really cares about the NBA either. It's really the NFL's world, and everyone else is just living in it.
That's true. And the NFL's world is really our world, so that's very
That's
exciting.
right. That's
And that's a
right.
perfect transition to
Yeah, it is.
the last item in the MAC, which is Cope. And this game, again, of the three losses that we're going to recap on this, is pretty easy to do. It certainly is very easy to cope with all of these losses, except maybe the Tampa one, in hindsight. But even at the time, this one was pretty easy. I will say, in Mourn, we kind of skipped over this, but this is a good place to talk about it. Like, there is always that nagging doubt that you might not be back.
Yeah, sure.
Obviously, the history of the NFL and the history of every sport is littered with great players who got close and then didn't make it back. Of course, Dan Marino is a really famous one. He made it to the Super Bowl in his second season. He won the MVP. He set the touchdown record, and then he never made it back to the Super Bowl ever.
Yeah.
And there was, there until you do it, there's always that doubt, can you get back? The Royals losing the World Series in Game 7, that felt very ephemeral. And it's like, well, will they ever be back in my
Yeah.
lifetime? Now, fortunately, both of those teams got it done the very next year, which certainly made it easier. But there was a lot to be proud of in this loss. You know, taking the Patriots to the wire, hosting your first AFC championship game in franchise history, and Mahomes' first season starting. And then, of course, he's now his floor is overtime in the AFC championship game. That's been our worst season performance since he became the starting
Wild.
quarterback, which is outrageous.
Impossible, really.
I mean, it is impossible. I mean, like, every time I think about that fact, I'm like, that can't be real. That's,
yeah.
Is this real life?
The hardest part about the NFL is the postseason. It is
sure.
That, you know, being able to do it in the tournament. That is something that is just not only is it not guaranteed, it's not even like doable for most teams to get there. Like, most teams just cannot ever make it happen. And it's just remarkable, continues to be remarkable year after year, because eventually the Chiefs are not going to get as far as overtime in the AFC title game, but they've gone 6 years now and gotten there every time. And I mean, that's one of the craziest runs in sports history, these last six years in the postseason for the Chiefs.
Absolutely. Cope. I mean, I think probably the biggest cope in the immediate aftermath of this game was Bob Sutton getting canned. You know,
for sure,
obviously the defense collapsed down the stretch the previous year in 2017. We've talked about on this pod before that unfortunate Titans game that we went to where the Chiefs had a 21-3 lead at halftime and blew that.
We're not recapping that one.
No, we're not. And we don't need to, but
we never will.
But I mean, this was like the most immediate silver lining, and everybody knew that it had to happen, but there was some doubt that it might happen because Andy, obviously, very loyal, fiercely loyal to his guys.
Yeah.
You know, Bob Sutton had been with him since the beginning. I mean, he was the guy that he brought over when he first came to Kansas City in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, when that news dropped, which I think was just the week after
pretty quick.
This game, pretty quick turnaround. That to me was really a shot of hope in the arm, because it had to happen. Now, we didn't know then that what we would be replacing him with would be the greatest postseason defensive coordinator in the history of the NFL. You know, at that point, it was
pretty
Steve Spagnuolo,
who,
you know, had a good 2007, you know, whatever, 13 years back.
Mm-hmm.
But he certainly has turned out very well.
Yeah, like most things the Chiefs do, really. You know, every move they've made since they brought Andy Reid in, for the most part, has worked out brilliantly. I mean, that's the only way to build a dynasty like this. That's the only way, is you have to be both good and lucky. And they have been both good and lucky. And taking what could have killed some franchises, and losses like this have killed franchises before. I mean,
we have killed franchises
with losses like this before. See the Buffalo Bills several times. But, you know, instead of doing that, it re-energized them. It got them to bring in, I mean, we won't really get into this on this show, but like Frank Clark and Honey Badger and all that stuff came along with Spags to the 2019 team that immediately won a Super Bowl. And I mean, all of those moves were reflective on this not being good enough, and the Chiefs recognizing that this wasn't good enough and making a move to get good enough. And I mean, probably has never been a bigger move other than getting Andy Reid than getting Steve Spagnuolo, as far as transactions and drafting Patrick Mahomes, of course. But just when you coping, as you said, is very easy at the present in March 2024, looking back on these three losses and this one specifically, because it just worked out. It worked out. That's the easiest way to cope for us to cope today, is to look at this and be like, yeah, you know, it sucked. But like, I don't know how many events you can actually improve in the Chiefs' history that butterfly effect would have created a present as good as this one. You know, like, I don't know if the Chiefs win this game and even win the next game and win the Super Bowl 53. I don't know what their future looks like. I don't think that they fire Bob Sutton, certainly.
Right.
And
right.
if they don't fire Bob Sutton, I don't know how you can win 54, 57, and 58 with the construction that they had there. And so
and I mean, the thing about butterfly effects is, like, it literally is the flapping of the butterfly's wings. Like, if you don't fire Bob Sutton, there's no guarantee you get Steve Spagnuolo, because
that's
Steve Spagnuolo probably gets hired by somebody else.
Yeah.
I mean, not even like, even if you fire Bob Sutton the next year after he blows What was the
Right.
next one? Which you wouldn't,
Right.
because he'd be a Super Bowl winning
Yeah.
defensive coordinator.
Yeah.
You know, you just might not ever get that guy, and you
Nope.
might not ever get the
Well, how about
opportunity
this? How about
to
if
reach
your
the point we're at now.
defense sucks ass so much? Let's say Mahomes in 18 wins the MVP and can't get it done in the playoffs because his defense blows it. And then in
Sure.
19, let's say he wins a shitload of games as he did and then gets to the playoffs and Bob Sutton's defense blows it again. You don't know how many blows like that a player can take
Sure.
before he requests a trade, before he
Right?
doesn't put his all into his, workout and everything else. I mean, yes, Mahomes is perfect and he probably would have bounced back and been even better because that's who he is.
And he
But
probably would have canned Bob Sutton himself,
he
let's be
probably
honest.
would have.
But
He would have thrown a football directly at his head and killed him, probably. But like the point is, nothing is guaranteed other than the path, the exact path that you took to get here. Any diversion from that path could have created a wildly different outcome, Back to the Future and all that, so I just, yes, coping. We are thankful at looking back that things unfolded the way they did, because I don't know if anyone could possibly have conceived of a better next 5 years of football than what we've had since then.
let's hit the awards. We have, for those of you unfamiliar, three types of awards. We've got our five-star men who threw their play on the field. Shout out, I'm a five-star man. We have our trash men.
I'm the trash man. I come out, I throw trash all over the ring, and then I start eating garbage.
Who threw their play are eating garbage all over the field. And we have our wild cards
Wild card, bitches! Yeah!
who are capable of anything. This is an interesting game because there weren't a lot of necessarily standout performances for, the level of game that we watched. I will take to start off my five-star man. I'll leave you with the other obvious choice. I'll take Damian Williams. We obviously crowned him last week. We're running it back. It's easy to forget that he was the running back too, and that this all happened very soon after the Chiefs cut Kareem Hunt
Right.
for getting involved in that altercation and then lying to the team and getting blown up by TMZ. Still think that that was, I mean, the headline said brutalizes, and it's maybe a little bit exaggerated there, but like I do think he was a little bit of a victim of a hostile press. But in any case, Damian comes into this game, 96 total yards, three touchdowns, and there was a play in this game that he didn't make, which of course could have helped. There was a play where he wasn't looking for the ball, Pat overthrew him, and the Chiefs ended up settling for not a touchdown on that drive that, could have turned the tide potentially. But all in all, this was one of the Chiefs' better performers on offense, even though he only rushed at 3 yards a clip in this game. I mean, it was cool to see a running back with juice. And I know Pacheco occasionally when he gets running downhill, like he's got some top end speed. Damian just he had a special gear and he was a special playoff performer. And we'll be talking about him a lot more in the next three games that we'll be recapping in this segment. But yeah, my five-star man, Damian Williams.
Yeah, definitely earned it. Was awesome in this game, and really, as you said, especially given the fact that he took over so late for Kareem. If Kareem Hunt had had this performance, it would have been great. We would have thought that was really cool. But like, certainly the fact that Dame was a late addition and then just continued to pile up the playoff touchdowns, he was awesome. I'm going to go with second half Patrick Mahomes. And normally we don't divide our awards into first and second half, but I mean, it's worth noting that Belichick had his number the first half. He had 65 yards, no touchdowns, three sacks in the first half for Mahomes, and just kind of wasn't on the same page, looked a little lost at times. You got to remember he was very young at this age. He was 23. This was his
As
second.
Romo repeatedly emphasized,
Yes, he did.
to a positive degree the previous game, but then in this game, Mahomes, he's not making checks at the line of
Mahomes.
scrimmage like Tom Brady, and he's still young. He doesn't understand, what the defense is doing here.
Well,
Whatever.
this was one of the only times. I mean, I guess maybe the Jacksonville game this season in 2018, where Mahomes didn't just go out and go nuclear on every single person every time he threw the ball. I mean, this was a moment of him being human, but it only lasted a half. It didn't even last the full game because obviously in the second half, he went ballistic and threw for 230 yards and three touchdowns, and the game tying field goal with 38 seconds left, and just was in general the exact player that we've seen him on 95% of the snaps that he's had in his career. He was amazing. And so second half Mahomes, this game was 14 to nothing at halftime. The Patriots were up two touchdowns. And this is one of the rare times that the Chiefs had been shut out in the first half with Mahomes. And he came out and, they scored a touchdown in the third to cut the game closer, but then put up 24 points in the fourth quarter. One of the just all-time performances in a fourth quarter in a big game against a team and a coach and an opposing quarterback that made a living with other teams wilting in these situations and
Right.
not being able to go nuclear in the fourth quarter. That's the thing that the Patriots always did to other people. It wasn't something that people did to the Patriots. And he pushed them to the limit. He gave them everything he had. Second half Pat in this game was amazing.
It's crazy because I mean, it's one thing to tie a game with 13 seconds left, right? It's one thing to do that against Sean McDermott, who has a
For
history
sure.
of choking in big games and making boneheaded decisions with his coverages that, enable Travis Kelce to just sort of improvise his way to a 30-yard gain to set up the game tying field goal. But it's another thing to do that against Bill Belichick at the height of his powers. And let's not forget that the very next week, or 2 weeks later, technically, in the Super Bowl, WizKid Sean McVay and Jared Goff, who was another
Yes.
MVP candidate that season,
Yes.
scored 3 points
Gotten
against this
clowned.
very same defense. So it's crazy that, with 39 seconds left to tie the game, they go on a 48-yard drive in 31 seconds. They didn't even need the full clock to be able to get
They
into range and
threw a
kick.
pass at the end zone late that didn't make it, but I mean, they had a chance to win the game.
They had a chance to win the game. And if this game had gone to overtime with the ability of both quarterbacks to possess the ball, who knows what would have happened? I mean, the Patriots get the ball first, they score seven. I would not have bet against Pat to score eight. So obviously, great choice there. For the trash man, since I gave you the obvious one for the five star, I'll take the obvious one for the trash man. It's Dee Ford. Listen, it's crazy that how quickly his career flamed out after that. And I feel bad for the guy because I
Good
don't
point.
wish ill on, players really ever, occasionally, but certainly not guys that play for the Chiefs. And, he was traded then for a second round pick and change to the Niners. And he ended up, I mean, he only played 17 regular season, 18 regular season games after this game. He was 27 years old in this game, and he only played 18 more regular season games and
Jeez.
three playoff games. So, I mean, a total of 21 NFL games after this. The injuries obviously did him in. But what's tragic about this performance is that it's not injury related, it's not coaching related, it's completely unforced. It just it is it is what it is. You just like you have the opportunity to not cost your team a chance to go to the Super Bowl, and you blew it. So that's a big time trash man for our guy Dee Ford.
He devastated a whole fan base forever. I mean, there's no other way to put it. And he will forever be remembered for that one play. Anytime for the rest of his life, the rest of our lives, anybody mentions D Ford on the Chiefs, this
That's
is the
right.
only thing anyone's ever going to remember,
I
ever.
mean, Dee Ford, period. I
D
mean,
Ford,
like
period, in his NFL career.
that's all
Yes.
anyone will
Yes,
remember him for
offsides
ever.
D Ford. So sucks, but that's the way it goes. I'm gonna pick Julian Edelman in this one because that
Oh,
punt
yeah.
touched him. There's nothing anyone can say to convince me otherwise. It was bullshit. Patriots fans try and defend it just like they try and defend that stupid N'Keal Harry touchdown later, a couple
That
years
was
later
horrible.
in Boston. This was clearly that guy just makes me so infuriated thinking back to how that should have been a big time fumble for a Patriot that just got away with it. Julian Edelman, you suck.
Yeah, that's a good choice. We obviously already when we hit the accuse, that's always going to be pretty trash manny. So, Bob Sutton, we had some other options for this. Bob Sutton, the refs. For the
Plenty.
wild cards, let me hit you with Dirty Dan Sorensen here, because I had forgotten that he intercepted Tom Brady in this game. And It's going to be funny to relive the Dirty Dan playoff era as we spin forward these next couple of years. Obviously,
Sure.
we're gonna have him
We're going to five star the hell out of him against Houston.
through the Bengals game in 2021,
Yeah.
and I don't think this will be the last time he'll be a wild card.
I think that's
He
right.
was targeted 9 or 12 times in this game, gave up 9 receptions for 118 yards, which is the Dirty Dan that I know. But he did have that interception, and that was big time. Listen, I mean, the Chiefs, really the only way the Chiefs could get stops in this game was turnovers. They did it in the end zone with Big Reggie, and they did it with Dirty Dan picking off the goat. So, Dirty Dan, come on down. You are a wild card.
Yeah, it's we're being kind because we're looking back now, so you can kind of be generous with some of these awards because we now know that Dirty Dan can't hurt us anymore. That was it was a big interception right after the Edelman play that I just talked about. I mean that did kind of re-energize the crowd after being so mad and let down that they overturned that obvious call. I'm gonna pick for our last award of this game, Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce, because in this game, they were targeted a combined 8 times, only came up with half of them, 4 catches for 65 yards. They were as ineffective as a duo as pretty much any other game in their careers. I didn't go back and do all their combined numbers for every game that they played together, but I sure would think 4 catches for 65 yards would be right up there with their. I mean, Tyreek Hill had one catch. It was early, it was 42 yards. And Trav had 3 catches for 23 yards. So they just this was not a banner day for the two future Hall of Famers. And Patrick still managed to throw for 300 yards and 3 touchdowns. He still got it figured out. Sprinkled everything around from Robinson and Ware and Demetrius Harris and Chris Conley and all those guys. But like, and Watkins had 4 catches for 114 yards. He also had a big 54 yarder to start the second half. That was a good shot in the arm for the offense. But I just Wild card really more than trash men because of how much Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce mean to the team and mean to me as a fan. And like, yeah, they were pretty bad this game, but that's showing that they're capable of anything because so often they are just as good as it possibly gets as a duo in the NFL, and they weren't in this game.
That does it for our recap of Chiefs Patriots, second game of our long journey to the next great American dynasty. Tune in next week for another playoff victory and hopefully some more news. Let's get out there and get something done, Brett. Go sign somebody. See you guys next time. It's always a new Chiefs Kingdom.